Musk and Amber by William Frankland, with Patrick Malahide as Dr. James Maxwell. The scene is set in India in 1872. Musk and Amber.
Dr. Maxwell, sir. Doctor, sir, please wake up.
Who is it?
It is I, sir. Rizla Major.
Rizla Major? Oh, Fazil, isn't it? Fazil Khan?
That is correct, sir.
Oh, what time is it? Oh, good God, Rizla Major, it's 4 a.m.
I am truly sorry to have to disturb you, sir.
Oh, well, it's a penalty to the profession. It's not another case of cholera, is it, among the men?
No, sir.
I hope it's not another of those wretched horses. I wish they'd get it to their heads. I'm not a blasted vet.
No, sir. It is Brigadier Denniston, sir.
Denniston? Well, I'm not surprised. Blood pressure like his. I told him to lay off that brandy and a bottle of maraschino. Beastly, sickly stuff.
Brigadier Denniston is dead, sir.
Dead? My God. Still, all that hock and port and brandy, he was going it for a man of 60. I warned him about a stroke, Rizla Major.
It is not a stroke, Saab. He has been murdered, Saab.
He? What?
His throat has been cut, Saab.
Oh, my God. Where is he? Oh, when did it happen?
He is in his bungalow, Saab. Colonel Graham is with him. Deputy Ayub Khan, who was on patrol, saw the Brigadier Saab's front door was open and the lights burning. He found the body and came straight to me. Colonel Graham has ordered me to come to you to request that you should step across to the bungalow. It is just across the way, Saab.
God. I knew it was a wild night, Rizla Major. Reunion of the old regiment and all that. I seem to remember smashing a few plates myself. But murder... Good Lord. So somebody finally got to the Brigadier before the booze did, eh? Hold on. We'll go over together.
Hands up.
Oh, it's cold. Where are my shoes? Better take my black bag, don't you think?
Maxwell, I'm over here in the bedroom. Wait, I'll close the shutters.
Stay here in the living room, Little Van Major. You've seen the Brigadier already, of course.
Yes, I have, sir.
Now, Colonel.
He's on the bed. He's lying half in and half out of it. I'll untangle the sheets a little.
Lord Colonel, leave them as they are, please. God, it's close in here. I'll turn up the lamp. Can you smell something odd?
Smell something?
Some sort of scent, do you think? Heavy perfume, perhaps?
Yes, I did notice that.
I just edge around the bed. Not a pretty sight, is he?
No, he's not.
God, what a mess. Let's see. Yes. A terrible wound, don't you think?
Very terrible.
Right below the glottis, as far as the ear, and beyond. A razor, would you say?
Yes.
Or some exceedingly sharp knife. Huge amount of blood. It's usually like that with a throat wound. But no other apparent cuts or slashes.
That one was quite enough.
Big fellow, wasn't he? Most people seem to look smaller in death, but he seems just as big. Body still warm. The pillow warm, too. And the other side of the bed. Warmish as well.
Is that so? Well, you know how Frank... Oh, no, of course you didn't know Frank. I was forgetting you're only here because of the epidemic. What's that you've got? Did you pick something off the bed?
Oh, nothing, Colonel. Nothing important. Good God, what's that?
It's from the servants' quarters. They're badly frightened. I ordered them to stay shut up in their own part of the house. They're not concerned with this.
Why is the woman wailing like that? Is she another of Deniston's, you knows?
She could be. Frank was a lusty brute. No use concealing it.
No.
A forceful man, Frank. You'll find that out the deeper you get into it.
Sort of man who might get himself murdered, you mean? Thank God for that. Well, I can't do much more here. I can't take a real look at him till it's daylight. I gather you'll want me to draw up the formal report, then.
Can we get into the living room?
Yeah, let's do that. I'll be glad to get out of here.
Me too, and I'll be glad of a drink if we can find one. Why don't you poke the fire up a bit? It looks as though there's still a spark left.
Sound idea.
Whistle down, Major.
Funneled up.
Servants are all confined to quarters.
Yes, sir.
Good man, I want you to go out and mount guard on the veranda. Make sure that Daffodil, Ayub Khan, and whoever else knows about this, keep their mouths shut until they're given permission to speak, understand?
Yes, sir.
Don't alert any of the other officers. They'll learn about it soon enough, and after last, they'll need their sleep. Understood?
Understood, sir.
Right, then cut along. Keep everyone away. I want to have a talk with the doctor here.
Sir.
Fine soldier, that. One of the old school. Joined up at 12, 40 years in the service. Tower of strength, first to Frank, then to me. Went through all our campaigns. We've been in some tight places together. We'll all be sorry when he retires next month.
That's right, huh? We could blaze in a minute. Tight places. When you were all in the Marathas, I take it.
Third Maratha Irregular Cavalry. It went through both the Sikh Wars, Persia, the Mutiny, Central India, Pera and Pegu. Frank was the CO, I was his adjutant. And then they turned us into this newfangled 20th Bengal Light Cavalry and made me the colonel of it and put Frank on the shelf. Well, you know I had our differences over the years, but I made sure he enjoyed his last reunion, didn't I?
You certainly did.
I wonder what you made of him.
Deniston. Rather a bull of a man, don't you think? Overpowering.
As you said, the sort of man who gets himself murdered. And God knows death is common enough out here. Let's see what he's got to drink, shall we? Ah, a plentiful array. He always travelled well stocked up, did Frank? Very fond of his creature comforts.
Do you think he had a woman in there with him?
Extra's brandy, first class. A woman? I told you he was fond of his creature comforts. Brandy, do you?
Fine. If there was a woman, do you think it was Mrs. Bamford?
I don't think I want to talk about Mrs. Bamford.
Still, do you suppose...
I don't think I want to talk about her, Doctor.
As you wish.
I take it the gossip of our little hill station has already reached your ears after you've been here less than a week, is it? Mrs. Bamford is undoubtedly a fetching lady. I'm sure you've heard my name connected with her as well.
I'm afraid I have, Colonel.
And there's not much point in my trying to conceal the fact that I've always had a particular regard for Mrs. Bamford.
How long has she been a widow?
Well, now, aren't these the sort of questions that you might want to put to her yourself? I'm hoping, you see, that you are going to help us clear up the mess.
Oh.
And the more quickly and more discreetly it's done, the better.
I haven't got all that much expertise, as you put it.
Oh, come now. Weren't you telling us that you were originally in the old East India Company, but that after the mutiny you went back to study medicine? Didn't you say you took your degrees in, where was it, Edinburgh and Heidelberg?
I did, yes.
And then you went on to do a stint as a police surgeon in the East End of London? You told us some interesting stories about that. Plenty of experience there, I'd have thought.
This brand is good. It's cold at night in these hill stations when you're used to the plains. Well, may I tell you one thing that I've happened to notice?
What?
In the bedroom back there, Deniston's wallet was on the dressing table with his gold watch, his gold ring, and his diamond studs. So whoever killed him wasn't an ordinary thief. Then what was he murdered for, There's not likely to have been any of the troops out there, Indian or British, because he was only a visitor here, like me. He was retired. Came simply for the sake of the reunion.
say he wasn't robbed, which means it definitely wasn't a dacoit from down in the village. And because of the quarantine, the patrols are very strict
there. So who does that leave us with?
Colonel, I might as well say it. It leaves us with the people who are closest to him. It leaves us with the officers who were at the party last night. One Major Jack Bannister, two Captain Glenn Mitten, three Captain Murray Smith Fletcher, and four, you, Colonel Graham.
Me?
Well, wasn't there also something about him holding back your promotion in earlier years? Didn't he try to prevent your succeeding him as Colonel of the regiment? Old grudges, old jealousies, perhaps?
I'm not going to be sorry I called you in, Doctor. Listen, Maxwell, Frank could be a pain in the neck at times, but I respected him. When I was a younger man, I hero-worshipped him. He was Clive, Havelock, the Lawrences, Colin Campbell, all rolled into one. He was a great soldier. Oh, he was too strict, too regimental, too keen on discipline. He could be mean. He did try to brought by promotion, but he ruined his own chances too, remember. There was a very nasty scandal about a Persian girl. He was keeping a dig. He treated her badly. She had a child by him. It was a rotten business altogether, but all the same, he was one of the best damn light cavalry men that the army in India has ever produced. I didn't kill Frank Maxwell. There were times when I wanted to kill him, God knows, but if I had, I would have stepped straight up to him and shot him between the eyes. I would not have crept into his bedroom and butchered him while he slept.
Well, then, I'm sure you won't mind if I check up where you were between the time the brigadier was carted off to bed around 1 o'clock and about 3:30 when the Duffadar stumbled on the body.
Yes, you're a clever man, Doctor. You've already ruled out Indian robbers or the other ranks and narrowed it down to someone who was probably getting drunk with him in the mess last night. Who might that be? Glyn Mitten? With his bad Welsh temper, Jack Bannister, one of the canniest men you'll ever meet. Murray Smith Fletcher, full of booze and self-pity and always pitiably scared of old Frank. Oh, you can add me too, if you like, and Rose Bamford. All the same, there's something else that I think you want to know. Something important.
Yes?
I think that you ought to know that Frank's mightn't be the only body you may be called upon to look at in the course of your medical duties.
I'm sorry, Colonel.
I mentioned four men. All four, believe it or not, are in distinct danger of meeting the same end.
How so? Look,
Jack Bannister and I are the prime candidates. But Mitten and Smith Fletcher are in danger too.
Don't you think you'd better explain, Colonel?
Have you heard of the Daig Mutiny?
The Daig Mutiny? No, I don't think so. Why?
It was one of the rash of small mutinies that followed the big one in 57.
What happened at Daig?
The Marathas were back at their old depot when the lid blew off. You recognize the causes, fear of the grease cartridges and so forth. It took Frank more than 48 hours to squelch the thing. He was a hard man, Frank. He was in an awful rage. But he did discriminate when it came to time to punish the ringleaders. He singled out only 6 men. They'd been a savage business, and he might have picked out a lot more than that. The trouble was, he decided to have them blown away from the guns instead of simply hanging them. And Victor Beckwith couldn't stand that.
Beckwith?
You've heard of him?
Oh, of course. Captain Beckwith of the Secunda Bank. Beckwith VC, that Beckwith.
Yes.
I didn't remember he'd been with the Marathas.
Marvellous chap. You asked Fazil Khan sometime about the attack on the breach of the Secunda Bank. That's where Jens and Victoria Cross. They went through it together, sword in hand. Unfortunately, Beckwith was hearted like Glyn Mitten. He was just 30 when he was court-martialed.
Oh, I seem to recall something about that. What happened?
Well, he refused Frank's order to take charge of the execution. He wouldn't even attend the parade. Total disobedience. Have you ever seen men blown away from the guns? No. It's a horrid sight. There were 6 of them. Blasted away to kingdom come. It breaks their caste, you see. It disfigures the body, completely destroys it. It robs the men of his hopes of heaven. Beckwith wouldn't have it.
I think I think I will take another peg of that Exshaw's. It's very chilly.
But what's this got to do with special danger to you and Bannister?
The court-martial. Jack and I were on Beckwith's court-martial.
Ah. Yeah. Thanks.
So were Ralph Stone and Michael Mercer.
Who were Stone and Mercer?
Major Stone, found dead in his bedroom at the Blue and Grey Club in Calcutta in 61. Some kind of poison. Supposed to be suicide. Captain Mercer disappeared at Delhi.
What year was that?
64. And now Frank. 5 members of the court. 3 of them dead. See what I mean?
Indeed I do. Musk and amber.
Beg your pardon?
No, it's a quotation, Colonel, from one of Francis Bacon's essays. There is musk and amber in revenge.
I dare say Francis Bacon's right. So you're a literary Johnny like Bob Beckwith.
What happened to him?
Dismissed the service.
And then?
Sang from sight, went home, probably, or drank himself to death in some hole in India. He lost his Victoria Cross into the bargain. Wouldn't you sink from sight, Doctor?
Yes. Yes, I would.
We better drink up. It's a pity to leave a fire on this bottle, but we've work to do. It's getting light. The wind has died down. You'll want to go back to that room and examine Frank. You'll need to talk to us all in turn. As for me, I've got to make the arrangements for the funeral this afternoon. No point in hanging about, and it's going to be another scorcher. Musk and amber. Where's the Major?
Hands up.
You're under Dr. Maxwell's orders. You'll be in charge of removing the body and providing the barrow party.
Hands up.
The parade is at 4 o'clock this afternoon. 2 jemadars and 4 silvers. Good picked men.
Well, there's no doubt about it. That leg looks far better today.
Yes, thank heavens. I can't afford to lose a good pony.
Well, it's not nearly so hot and swollen. If it goes on like this, we'll have that splint off in no time.
Hey, whoa there, Carriad. It's very good of you to do this, Doctor. I'm very grateful. With the Farrier Sergeant sick and the Farrier Corporal so new to the job...
No, I'm glad to do it.
There isn't any chance that the Farrier Sergeant has got the cholera, is there?
Is that what people are saying?
Well, with the quarantine and everything...
I've never known such a place as this for tales and rumours. No, the man has malaria. Is that the story that's going round? Cholera?
Well, I'm afraid so, yes.
I'd advise you to stamp on that as firmly as possible, Captain Mitten. There you are, my beauty. Soon be on the mend. Aye, she's a pretty animal, that. Well, that's all I can do for now. I'll just wash my hands, if I may.
You were telling me on the way across to the stables that Colonel Graham has asked you to look into the Brigadier's death. All shocking business. Simply shocking. What a way for a man like that to end.
You were one of his officers in the Marathas, then.
Denison trained me. Great manager of men was Denison.
Did you always get on with him?
Why not?
I just gather that some people didn't. Do you mind if I just sit down for a moment on this bale of hay?
Oh, that's better.
I don't mind confessing I'm tired. I've been up since 4. Oh, it's pleasant here in the shade. Getting too damned hot out there.
It'll get a damn sight hotter presently. Has Graham been saying something about me?
Well, I did ask him to fill me in. Give me the whole picture, so to speak.
What did he tell you, that he had his own little troubles with Denison?
He did, yes.
And I suppose he mentioned my own particular spot of bother.
Almost everyone seems to have got across the Brigadier at some time or another. Yeah. He was just that sort of man. Mm-hmm. Someone did just happen to drop a hint about that matter of the accounts.
Oh, yes. Someone would just happen to drop a hint about that. My God! Oh, Denison, never let me forget it. You always held it over me. He kept reminding me about it all through the reunion, all through dinner last night.
Rather heavy-handed about it, was he?
Oh, exactly. Heavy-handed.
Got under your skin, did he?
He was good at that. He enjoyed it.
Yes, I rather gathered the old fellow relished his little bit of power.
That he did. But whatever Graham told you, it was a simple mistake. There was nothing underhand with those accounts. It was just carelessness. Look, I'm a cavalryman, not a bloody bank clerk. Denniston should never have made me treasurer of the mess. I'm sure he did it on purpose.
Please, I'll take your word for it.
Oh, thank you very much for nothing. Accident or not, a shortage in the accounts wasn't going to do my career much good, was it, if he let it leak out? He used it to keep me in line, as he liked to keep everyone else in line. He liked to have something to hold over you.
The Brigadier seems to have had some peculiar little ways.
Some peculiar big ways as well. Mind you, I love the Marathas. There wasn't another cavalry regiment like it, not in the whole of India. Certainly none of those laddie-da outfits in England. If it hadn't been for that damn fiasco a day, we'd never have been broken up. We'd all still be with it today.
Well, don't you like your present posting? 18th Lancers?
Of course I like it, but it isn't the Marathas, is it?
The fiasco a day. Then you don't think the mutiny had much to be said for it?
No, no, I do not.
And Captain Beckwith, not much sympathy for him either.
Well, why shouldn't I be missed? I never shared in the universal admiration for Victor Beckwith. A conceited man. Altogether too full of himself. Did you say you were finished here? Are you ready to go? I've got my troop to get ready for this afternoon's parade.
So you didn't like Victor Beckwith? Conceited, was he?
A proper prima donna. That Victoria Cross of his went to his head. So did his popularity with the men. Oh, for God's sake, get out of this stable.
That isn't how I heard it exactly.
Heard what?
You and Victor Beckwith. Hadn't you been very close? As thick as thieves, somebody told me.
That's a damn lie.
I was told it was Captain Beckwith who interceded with Brigadier Denniston for you.
Lies. If you want to sit there all morning, suit yourself, but I'm off now.
Captain Mitten, do you remember exactly where you were last night? When the party came to an end, when Major Bannister and another officer were taking the Brigadier home?
I was on the veranda, if you want to know, having a last beer in essence, smoking a last cigar.
Well, I can check that with the others.
Now check it as much as you like me, damn to you!
I would like you to tell me before we leave, if you recall where you were when Major Storm died. And Captain Mercer. It's some time ago, but can you remember if you were on leave in Calcutta or Delhi at the time of the death?
God almighty, you've got a bloody cheek, I must say.
No, 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 don't look so threatening. There's been enough violence already, and maybe more to come. Let's just keep our emotions under control, shall we? These are questions I'm going to have to ask everyone. When the quarantine is lifted, I shall get access to the service records in the Central Registry at Umballa.
Don't you think, Doctor, that you're more than exceeding whatever authority Colonel Graham may have seen fit in his wisdom to give you? What damn business is it of yours, may I ask, how Ralph or Mike Mercer died, or the Brigadier come to that?
I hold a commission in the Bengal Army as well, you know. As Colonel Graham pointed out, the sooner this ugly affair is disposed of, the better for all of us. But you do see what I'm driving at when I ask you about the deaths of Stone and Mercer.
I'm not stupid. You think they were killed, like Denniston, because they were on Beckwith's court-martial.
The only two members of that court-martial who are still alive are Philip Graham and Jack Bannister. The killer, whoever he is, or she is, has got a great chance now everyone's shut up together in quarantine. Whoever it is can make a determined run at finishing it off.
Yeah, well, you may be right.
I wonder, though, why the Colonel hinted that you and Murray Smith Fletcher were only in slightly lesser danger than himself and Jack Bannister. After all, neither of you were involved in the court-martial, were you?
You mean to say Graham didn't tell you, nor any other of your obliging friends?
Tell me what?
Of course we were involved in it. Don't you know we both appeared as witnesses? It was Murray and I who testified about his refusing duty that day. Well, actually, I didn't do him as much damage as Murray. Murray was one of the ones who envied him, that VC. Oh, he really loved giving evidence to the court. He's always been a sneaky bit of a rat. But I was responsible, too. I helped to get him convicted and booted out of the army.
Good Lord.
You see why Phil Graham says we're in danger, the whole lot of us. And don't you think we ought to add another name to the list as well?
Mm-hmm. Whose?
Why, yours, of course. What do you think is going to happen to you if you go around poking your nose into what doesn't concern you? Who's there?
Mr. Fletcher, it's Dr. Maxwell.
Who?
Dr. Maxwell.
What do you want?
Can I ask you a couple of questions, Captain?
I'm sick. I'm in bed. I gave orders. I wasn't to be disturbed. I wasn't to be disturbed, I said. I'm ill. I can't get out of bed.
I'm a doctor, Captain. Why don't I take a look at
you? Go away. I don't know anything about Denniston. Don't bother me. I can't. My room, for God's sake.
Why not let me in so that I can examine you, Captain?
Get away from that door.
All this sickness, it might even be the cholera. As a medical officer, I've got a right to...
Damn you. I've got my revolver. Why don't you stop pestering me? You better stand back. I don't give a damn. Tell Graham I can't leave this room. Tell him what you're damn well like. You think I want to die the same way as Denniston? I'll give you 5 seconds to get away from that door.
Captain,
one.
Please,
two.
A minute of your time.
Three.
Oh, for heaven's sake, man. All right, have it your own way. Come back this evening.
Let me alone. All of you, leave me alone.
Oh, the Tigger, too. Got a bullet right through the door and almost blew my head off.
Well, you were warned what you were doing is dangerous. Poor old Murray. Frank's death has made him windy, has he?
Oh, damn it, old Bannister. I only wanted to talk to him.
You can't blame him, can you? Until the scene in Frank's bungalow is pretty gruesome. Is that true?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Murray's always tended to fly off the handle. Believe it or not, great things were expected of Murray when he was young. Brilliant boy. Famous old military family. But when things got hot, he'd lose his head. At the Kundra Bar, for example. It was Beckwith and Fazil Khan who dragged him through. Maybe that's why he hated Beckwith so much.
Well, is that why he gave evidence at the trial?
Who told you about that?
Glenn Mitten did.
Ah, yeah. Sit down, Doctor, won't you? It's cool out here on the veranda. Can I pour you a drink? Be an ass.
Oh, thanks very much. Well, it's certainly hot enough. Rushing up and down, trying to talk to people.
How's that?
Grand. Oh, I needed that. What a climate. 20-odd years in India, and I'm still not used to it.
Except when you went back to England, of course. To Germany, too, wasn't it?
I gather I told you about that, did I?
In the mess. What made you resign from the old John Company?
Oh, when they dissolved it after the mutiny. Gave me a chance to take stock, so to speak. I'd always wanted to practice medicine. My father was a doctor in Glasgow.
Is that so?
Tell me, Major, have you got a minute before the parade? I see you're all dressed for it.
That's bib and tucker. Can't let old Frank down, can we?
Can we talk for a moment?
Where's my watch? The band is warming up. I'll have to join my squadron soon. But how can I help you, Doctor?
You know the Colonel has asked me to, well, try and unravel this business.
I'd heard that, yes.
Well, then you'll realize that I can't afford to let the trail get cold. And in this case, there's the special urgency.
Ah. Because whoever is behind it might decide to knock off the rest of it.
Precisely. It's not unlikely, is it? The reunion is a splendid opportunity.
Well, obviously, poor Murray is expecting something of the sort.
I can understand him being so scared if he was the one who finally landed Beckwith in the cart. And I may say that he also struck me as, well, a vindictive sort of man.
You guess right.
But I don't understand why Glenn Mitten would have turned on Beckwith. I like him. He seems straightforward. I'd heard he and Beckwith were great comrades, so hop it wrong.
Glynn is quarrelsome, like most of his race. An old and haughty people, proud in arms. He lost his Welsh temper with Victor over a hand of cards. It happens all the time out here. The heat gets on your nerves. It makes you drink too much. Still, they'd have made it up if it hadn't been for the foolishness of Daig. In any case, Glynn simply had to give the evidence he did. He was on parade. He was a witness to the whole thing. But he hated himself for having to do it. Not like Murray, who reveled in every minute of it. You're quite right there. Murray's a contemptible little blighter when you come down to it.
All the same, I doubt whether our murderer is going to let Mitten off if it's revenge he's after. Gave his evidence reluctantly, but he did give it.
Another brandy?
Oh, well, please.
He was a grand chap, Victor. Princely somehow. Reminded me of Outram. Peerless Outram, the Bayard of the East. Sans peur et sans reproche. How Frank delighted in putting me on that court martial. He had a very peculiar sense of humor.
I've been wondering if I ever happened to meet Beckwith in the old days.
But I imagine I would have remembered if I had.
Yes, you would. He didn't look unlike you, as a matter of fact. Something about the eyes. Of course, you're a lot older and your face is fuller. You've also got that moustache. Victor was clean-shaven. I take it Murray won't be showing up on the parade ground.
Too sick, he said.
I'll tell the Colonel. He'll get someone to stand in for him. He whistled a major, perhaps. He's always looked splendid, rigged out in his regimentals.
Oh, one last parade with the regiment before he's pensioned off, you mean?
It's been good to get as many of the old Marathas together as we can. You won't be parading yourself, Doctor?
Oh, no, no. I'm a stranger, after all. I thought I might use the time better by having a chat with Mrs. Bamford. I don't imagine she'll be going to the funeral either.
I imagine you've heard that Frank and Phil Graham used to be Dagger's drawn over
her. From the way she was looking at him at lunchtime yesterday and the way he was looking at her, I rather gathered something of the sort. Anyway, Major, it must be a consolation to know that of all the people concerned, you're probably the one who's least threatened, if any threat exists.
Me. But, my dear Doctor, aren't you aware I was an actual member of Marshall? Together with Denniston, Graham, Stone and Mercer.
Oh, yes, I've heard that, but you are the youngest, after all, merely a subaltern.
A member, all the same.
Or dragooned into it by the Brigadier, I take it.
Yes. Give me a choice. Court-martial or be court-martial?
So he couldn't have been very pleased at what you did.
How do you mean?
Well, weren't you the only one of the five who refused to find Beckwith guilty? Weren't you the lone dissenter? Didn't you refuse to go along with a verdict?
You think that's going to help me if there's some sort of maniac on the loose? He's already killed three of us, after all. It's taken him a good many years and a lot of travelling around, but he's done it.
Oh, then you guessed about Major Stone and Captain Mercer.
We've all guessed. Only it's not something we talked about. Just serving in India is quite risky and difficult enough, thank you.
Then why stage these reunions? Why expose yourselves by all getting together in one place?
Why not? We did love the old Marathas, Maxwell. And there's Asian fatalism, perhaps. Kismet and all that. The will of Allah. This fellow would track us down wherever we go. What's the point of trying to hide? But I can promise you one thing. If this chap's going to try and get me, he'd better damn well look out for himself. I've got a gun and a saber, and my hands are a hell of a lot steadier than Murray's is.
Major, I don't like to ask you this any more than I like asking the others, but could you give me any idea, offhand, where you happen to be?
Good God, is that the time? The men will be waiting.
Can you remember where you were?
Sorry, Doctor, another time. I must run. Ah, here comes a ripple of the Major. I asked him to step across so we could go together. Fine figure, isn't he? Beard, turban, medals all shining. Best soldier of the lot. The soul of the regiment. Major's up. Punch a little over, ripple of the Major. Help yourself to the brandy, Doctor. Maybe we'll have a chance to talk again later.
Oh, good shot. It's smacking the bull.
Thank you, Doctor.
Jolly glad you weren't shooting at me. Oh, my God, I say.
I couldn't resist that. You rather asked for it, didn't you? Would you put it out of the post? I'm not wasting them.
Oh, my word, it's fearfully sharp.
Isn't it? I think someone else has been shooting at you, Doctor.
Captain Smith Fletcher, or that was simply an accident.
Oh, Murray's getting nervous, is he? I thought he looked a bit green about the gills last night. Maybe he guessed something unpleasant was going to happen.
Did you guess it too, by any chance?
Me? Why ever did you think of such a thing? Oh, let's get out of this hot sun, shall we? There's a table with chairs over there under the tree. Oh, would you be a dear and carry this equipment for me?
Surely. It's a privilege being given charge of Diana's weapon.
Pretty compliments from a Scotchman.
Oh, when I watched you riding, I thought of you more as an Amazon.
More pretty compliments. I'd put you down as a somewhat square-toed member of a distinctly gloomy race. Still, I'm sure you can be serious enough when you need to be. In a minute, Shusha will be bringing us some tea.
Shusha?
My maid, or rather my companion.
Oh, I think I've seen her. Beautiful woman. It's rather an unusual name, isn't it? And she has unusual features for an Indian woman.
Oh, Shusha isn't Indian. Will you have a seat? Oh, this shade. I'll take off my hat. I've forgotten how hot it is up here in the hills in the daytime. Oh, here comes Shusha now with the tea things. Put it down here, will you, Shusha, my dearest?
Yes, indeed, Rose. Is there anything else you might want?
No, thank you, dearest. I don't think so.
Oh, yes, she's a very beautiful young woman. Gracefully she walks.
She isn't as young as all that, you know. She's not much younger than I am, as a matter of fact. How old would you say I am, Captain Maxwell? No, don't answer that. Do you take your tea sweetened or unsweetened?
Oh, unsweetened, please.
It's the strangest thing. Haven't we met somewhere before?
Alas, no. Would I have forgotten if we had?
Flatterer. However, I...
Shusha isn't Indian, you said?
Oh, she's a Persian from Shiraz. She was brought to India as a child. Why?
Oh, just curiosity.
Oh, you wouldn't be the first European to be smitten by Shusha. It's happened frequently. Bread and butter?
She calls you Rose, I notice. She's been with you a long time.
More years than I care to think of. Oh, she's been everywhere with me. All the places where Captain Bamford was posted, and right up till his death.
Mm. Were you and Captain Bamford at Daig, by any chance?
At Daig?
About the time of the mutiny there. Colonel Graham was telling me about it.
Oh, indeed we were. That is to say, I was. Could I ever forget it? My husband was Frank's quartermaster then. Well, not that he was concerned with the mutiny. He was down in Bombay or somewhere procuring stores or something of the sort. And when he got back and learned of everything that had happened, he was terribly upset. He was in a dreadful state for weeks after.
So you were there?
Oh, good heavens, yes. Well, I remember how hard I tried to persuade Frank to be reasonable. He could be horribly inflexible and pig-headed. He seemed to have something personal against poor Victor. I couldn't budge him, nor could Basil, my husband, when he returned a day or two later. Basil and Victor were at school together. Basil was most frightfully cut up.
Was it long after that that your husband was posted away from the regiment?
Oh, he landed a plum job, actually. Family influence. He was appointed ADC to the Viceroy, Lord Lawrence, so we went down to Calcutta. Oh, lovely life we had there. He died just 4 years ago. We'd been married 10 years. I came to be very fond of him.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What did he die of?
Well, the doctors never found out, really. An appendix, perhaps, something of that kind. Oh, you know, as a doctor, how unexpectedly people die out here. And how quickly they're buried.
Yes, indeed. Like the Brigadier at this moment.
Like Frank. Yes.
Mrs. Bamford, are you all right?
I don't know how I'd have coped with Basil's death. I mean, if it hadn't been for Shusha. Oh, I went to Europe a little while after and took her with me. She's wonderful company. And, of course, we've been all over India together.
Places like Delhi, perhaps?
Oh, everywhere. One of the tiny cakes, they're sesame seeds. Shusha bakes them. She's terribly capable.
I'm sure that you both are, Mrs. Bamford. Forgive me, but I couldn't help noticing as she was bending down with the tray, she uses a very distinctive perfume. Uses it rather lavishly. Something Persian, perhaps?
Oh, you are observant. Evidently she has made an impression on you. Should I be a little bit jealous, perhaps?
The perfume?
Yes, it is distinctive, isn't it? I can't say I much care for it myself, but she always wears it.
Yes, it's strange, musky, very exotic. Well, these really are delicious. What was it, I wonder, that brought you and Shusha up here to the hill country at this particular time? I thought there was more accessible places than this for you to have gone to.
More tea?
Oh, thank you.
Well, you see, the Marathas were holding their reunion. How could I resist it? Shusha, too. Sentimental business, Doctor. We were like a family.
So I gather.
Oh, it brought back the old days. Youth and all that. Old friends, old associations.
Oh, yes. I think you'd been associated with the Marathas even before you married Captain Bamford.
Oh, certainly I had. I used to ride and hunt with them. We had glorious times. Frank Denniston more or less adopted me when I first came out from England. Oh, I was just a green girl from Cornwall. He took me under his wing.
It was very considerate of him.
Yes, wasn't it?
I'd heard he was gallant, where the ladies were concerned. I take it he was a good many years older than you.
Oh, age didn't make any difference with Frank. Surely you noticed yourself how young and vigorous he was.
I did, yes.
Oh, no half measures with Frank. You hated him or you loved him.
And you loved him. Because he'd adopted you, I mean.
Yes, I loved him.
A very forceful man, as Colonel Graham put it to me. I wonder if it was possible for some people to do both.
To do both what?
To love him and to hate him as well.
My dear doctor, we're all aware that Philip has put you on to untangling the murder, but don't you think it's a little ridiculous all the same to suppose I could have killed him?
Oh, you know, you've got a very sure hand with a bow and arrow, and you're very skilled on horseback and at many other sports, I dare say. Aren't you a crack shot with a pistol and a rifle?
Frank taught me all about that.
Among several other things, perhaps.
Oh, the real square toes showing through at last, the country of John Knox. If that's all you've got to go on, my seat on a horse.
Ah, but it isn't, you see.
I beg your pardon?
There is something else. There's this.
What is it?
Oh, don't be afraid. Take it.
Let me see.
I don't like being indelicate under normal circumstances, but there's not too much time. Now, you must have noticed the atmosphere of peril hanging over the whole camp. You recognize what you've got there.
Where did you find it?
In the brigadier's bed, in a fold of the blankets. The bedclothes, like his body, were still warm.
A single bead. A lot of women possess an amber necklace, Doctor.
It's a very expensive amber necklace. I could readily establish that the amber bead is yours, you know. I mean, the Colonel would have to give me permission to search.
Well, Phil would never do that.
I'm sure I'd soon turn up the remainder of the necklace with its broken string. Mrs. Bamford, you were in Brigadier Denniston's bungalow last night, weren't you? You were wearing a necklace of amber beads, which snapped.
The amber still feels warm, like his bed, like his body. The necklace was one of the first things Frank ever gave me. He wasn't all that generous as a rule. I couldn't have been more than 17 or 18. 20 pieces of amber, beautifully matched. He brought them back from the northwest, from the Kachin Hills, when he was campaigning up there. Each one has a pretty little fly enclosed in the center, imprisoned in the piney resin, you see?
I had noticed, yes.
I suppose you could say my relationship to Frank was like that. Caught, like the little fly.
A man you could both hate and love?
It's a lovely thing, my amber necklace. The amber is such a rich, deep colour, like honey. So tingling to the touch. Frank always liked me to wear it.
I understand. And last night, it broke.
I thought, before I slipped away, I'd collected up every bead. I loved Frank, you know. He was the one real love of my life.
He caught you young.
Yes, he caught me young.
And held you in, enthralled, prisoners, in the amber.
None of the others were anything to Frank. He married me off to Basil, you know, when I was 21. I was becoming slightly inconvenient. Yet I came to have a great affection for Basil.
Surely you might have hated him just for that.
My dear doctor, if we women murdered all the men we hated or even disliked, the human race would have come to an end years ago. In many ways, yes, Frank was a terrible man, but I loved him. I knew I'd have done better to have loved Phil Graham, who was interested in me right from the start, but I woke up to that too late, but one can't order these things, can one? Frank has always called the tune. When he told me I'd got to come here to the reunion, I obeyed him. I always did.
Yet you aren't going to his funeral? Listen.
They're burying Frank. Phil, Jack, and John, and old Fazil Khan. No, I'm not there. You think that would have bothered him? Oh, he'd seen a lot of death one way or another. He despised death. He said once you were dead, you were very, very dead. Life was for the living. And Frank lived. Oh, yes, Frank lived. Well, you think I ought to be there, wailing and sobbing and making a spectacle of myself? What for? I don't want to see them putting him in the ground. I don't want my last memories of him to be his broken body all stained with the blood spread out all over it like a great red flag.
Who told you that, I wonder? About the body. About all the blood.
You wonder if I saw it in the bungalow last night. It was Shusha who told me.
Shusha?
Common gossip. The news was all around the camp as soon as they brought him out on the stretcher.
You know, someone told me that Denniston had an affair with a young girl who wasn't Indian and that there was a child.
You mean Shusha?
Well, that would explain something else I detected in the bedroom.
You're certainly very good at detecting, Doctor. Philip chose well.
There was a perfume there. Scent. Something exotic.
Oh, yes, that was Shusha. Oh, why not admit it? Frank brought her back from Bushir with him when the Marathas were fighting in Persia. He bought her, if you really want to know. When I married, he gave her to me, a wedding present. Like me, she was becoming inconvenient. Frank really did have a very odd sense of the fitness of things, Doctor.
He did indeed.
I'm sorry if I shock your covenanter soul, Doctor. Bengal isn't like Cornwall, exactly. Very wild things happen to us British out here. Even to Scotchmen.
I've lived most of my life in India, Mrs. Bamford. In any case, a doctor isn't easily shocked.
I have shocked you all the same. It's the idea of my sharing with Shusha, isn't it?
Well, I must confess that's something one wouldn't expect to run across often, even in a health station.
Are we women any worse than the men, with their intrigues and jealousies, their fighting and killing, their court-martials, their blowing away from the guns? Hardly. I shared Frank with a lot of women. I'd rather do it with Shusha than any of them.
Yes, but it's obvious that the two of you are rather close.
Oh, poor Dr. Maxwell. Let me pour you a last cup of tea.
No. So, there was a child too, was there?
I'd helped to bring him up. He's 11. A very handsome boy, very clever. He's with foster parents now, down in the town. Oh, his mother's going half mad being separated from him, with the plague and everything.
She doesn't show it.
Oh, she's good at concealing her feelings. We've both had a lot of practice.
Then you were both, as it were, with Brigadier Denniston last night. Unless, of course, you both went to his bungalow for a very different reason.
I held him down, you mean, while Shusha cut his throat. Or do you fancy it was the other way around? Oh, what a charming picture. In any event, it's all over now. I'm glad. I'm free. Shusha is free. Well, the boy's free if it comes to that. It was a long captivity. It has come to an end. You seem rather puzzled. I wonder, have you had much to do with Wendy?
Yeah, well, that's perspicacious of you. No, not a great deal. I have to confess that I haven't.
Well, I rather thought not. You're a clever doctor and a clever detective, but perhaps when it comes to the human heart, the parade is ending. Do you mind very much if we go in? It's growing colder. It'll be very cold tonight. Oh, never mind about the bows and arrows. Shusha will bring those.
A marvellous dinner, Colonel. Old Frank would approve of that.
A splendid bow out. I'm stuffed to the gills. Now, where are the decanters of the port and the actuals? It's not a brandy you've got him well on top of all that.
That's true, Glyn. Frank wasn't a great one for funerals. He always said they made him hungry.
A man of big appetites, Frank. I dare say you've discovered that, Doctor.
How about one of these shoots? Real Bangalore torpedoes.
Thanks.
Yes, I think I will.
I noticed you didn't eat much, Doctor. Bit off your food?
A little.
Your investigations are weighing on you.
Come on, Glenn. Everyone, pull up your chairs. Get comfortable. We're still celebrating the reunion, after all.
Yeah, grab these glasses, all of you. Port or brandy, anyone?
Here, Doctor. Take the armchair. Ah. That's good. I'm getting too old for these ceremonial parades. But the regiment looked very well, don't you think? Oh, I'm forgetting, Doctor. You weren't there.
Can you blame him? Gruesome business, really. In spite of all the flags and uniforms.
How's your cigar?
Bangalore torpedoes. Certainly strong.
Frank's favorite.
Bang him on the back, Phil.
So, Doctor, you've been doing to the ladies, have you?
I have.
Both of them?
Both of them, yes.
Do you get much out of them?
A fair amount.
Yeah, out of Shusha, too?
Well, not too much from her. I spent the best part of an hour with her before dinner. She wasn't very forthcoming.
Dew, it's an attractive girl, that. As attractive as Rose in her own way.
Evidently the Brigadier thought so.
I got onto that, did you? I wondered if you would.
Oh, didn't you want me to?
Glenn, pass over those walnuts.
You're not seriously going to tell me you suspect the women's well.
The life of an army hill station turns out to hold darker secrets than I thought, Colonel. I'm bound to suspect everyone. Still, I'm beginning to get the feel of the business now. I'm starting to sense the shape of the thing.
Ah, yes. I rather gathered you've been going all around the camp, dropping heavy hints about how you're on the verge of solving the crime.
So you think you're narrowing it down, Doctor?
What's that about narrowing it down?
The doctor does appear to believe he's close to clearing up the case. Is that right, Doctor?
Absolutely.
Well, that's good news. Isn't that good news, gentlemen?
And who is the guilty man, Doctor?
Or woman, don't forget.
Oh, don't be daft, Jack.
No, he's spreading the suspicion around. Aren't you, Doctor? You're spreading your net wide.
Oh, as wide as I can. I mean, so many people had a reason to kill him, you see. And so many had the opportunity.
Including us.
Look, Doctor, we're all here. Your three chief candidates, except for Murray Smith Fletcher, of course, and the ladies, if you insist. Why don't we all settle back in our chairs while you tell us about the progress you've made?
Yes. Tell us which one of us you're going to pick on.
Provide us with a little afternoon entertainment, so to speak.
Now, Jack, you'll have the doctor believing we're not taking this thing seriously enough.
Man, but I am. We don't want them holding another funeral tomorrow, do we?
Well, then, gentlemen,
where would you like me to start?
Why not with absent friends? Why not dispose of Murray Smith Fletcher first?
I gather he's still barricaded in his bungalow.
Hold up with plenty of bullets and plenty of brandy.
He doesn't trust us. He swears he's going to stay in there until the reunion's over and the quarantine's lifted. Then he'll scuttle back down to his regiment.
Honestly, Doctor, do you think Murray would have the guts to try and kill a man like Denniston?
He didn't show much guts at the Secunderabad. Victor and Fazil Khan had to pull him through.
He had enough guts to shoot at me this afternoon. Anyway, he had the opportunity. His bungalow backs onto Denniston's. He was the first to leave the party. I remember him telling me his stomach was playing up. He was just the sort of officer Denniston would have bullied.
You're right. He was.
I'd have to go into it more deeply, just as I'll have to go more deeply into where he was when Stone and Mercer died. Where all of you were when Stone and Mercer died. See, the trouble is, gentlemen, I have to say, I haven't yet come across a single one of you that can give me a really satisfactory account of himself in any respect.
We've grown very silent all of a sudden.
You've been doing your homework, Doctor.
We're impressed.
Still, it all sounds a little flimsy, don't you think, where Murray's concerned? You can't blame him for barring his door after the way he carved up Victor at the court-martial.
Well, who's next, Doctor? Who follows Murray into the dock?
How about you, Glenn?
Me.
But Denniston had got you well and truly by the short hairs over those accounts. You can't have loved him for that. Being the man he was, he'd have taken full advantage of it. What's more, it was you and Bannister who carted Denniston out of the mess while we were raising hell and carrying him back to his quarters. Wasn't it you or Bannister who put him to bed?
Neither of us actually put him to bed, Doctor. Frank could have a hell of a lot to drink, and after an hour or so, he'd shake it off like a terrier. We just dumped him, quite respectfully, of course, on his bed.
Then he must have undressed himself, mustn't he?
Well, he did undress. We know that in view of the way we found him.
And we know he wasn't alone later, either.
The devil he wasn't. I didn't know that.
Come up, Edlin. Don't be a simpleton.
Now, please, gentlemen. In any event, it would have been easy and natural for either of you to have returned to the bungalow an hour or so later on the pretense of checking up that he was all right.
So that's how you're going to drag me into the thing, is it? Because I played the Samaritan.
Like Mitten, Major, you admired Beckwith, and you stood up to Denniston. You refused to go along with his verdict at the court-martial. I dare say there were a good many other things besides.
You mentioned four of us as the main candidates, Philip. You, me, Glyn here, Murray, locked up in his bedroom with unlimited booze and a load of ammunition. Oh, and Rose Bamford and that pretty maid of hers. That makes six. But there's a seventh suspect, isn't there? Aren't we overlooking number seven?
Number seven? And who might that be?
Why, you, Doctor. Who else?
Oh, come on, Jack. You better knock off the brandy. Jack, the doctor, he hasn't so much met Frank until 3 or 4 days ago. What's more, he's never even set eyes on Victor.
Really? Haven't we only got the doctor's word for that? Chuck over the cheroots, Glyn, and the matches. Thanks.
So you've been doing some detective work of your own, Major?
Well, forgive me saying so, but you have been treating us as if we're more or less a bunch of idiots, haven't you? Admittedly, we cavalrymen aren't supposed to be bright. We all know the story of the cavalryman who was so stupid all the other cavalrymen noticed it. Still, even if we haven't been trained as doctors or lawyers or Oxford professors, I do rather resent the implication that we're incapable of logical thought. Even my feeble mind has managed to glean one or two odd little hints and pointers.
What sort of hints and pointers?
Jack, this is embarrassing. The doctor's been associated with the police, remember? Both in England and Bengal.
Again, may I point out that we've only got his word for that?
Oh, look, it's his heaven's sake.
Shall I explain, Dr. Maxwell?
Please do, Major Bannister.
It's like this, you see. A Captain Maxwell presents himself at our regimental office, produces some impressive-looking papers, and informs us that he's a Bengal Army medico. He tells us that he's put the town out of bounds because of an epidemic.
But there's nothing imaginary about the epidemic. There have been a dozen deaths a week for the past 2 months.
Nevertheless, he has cut off our communication with the world outside. This very effectively makes it impossible for us to check up on his bona fides. It also keeps us in one place, immobilized, so that it's a lot easier for him to do whatever it is come to do.
Jack, this is fantastic. You're really going to have to apologize to Captain Maxwell.
No, please, Colonel, let him go on. So Major Bannister thinks I came up here disguised for a nefarious purpose.
Oh, Jack, honestly.
I came up here dressed in the uniform of an officer in the Bengal Army to dispose of the Brigadier and also some of the rest of you, as I suppose I'd previously got rid of Major Stone and Captain Mercer.
As to that, your movements seem to have been quite as elusive as ours were. Have you been in Calcutta or Delhi in the last 10 years, Doctor? But let's say we give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's say you are a genuine doctor. After all, you did set that pony's leg very skillfully, and you've been making regular sick calls in the camp.
But if I'm genuine, what's all this rigmarole about a disguise?
Getting a bit hot in here, don't you think, Colonel?
Oh, you don't need any disguise. Pass the decanter, would you? Victor Beckwith is cashiered. He's still a young man. He returns to England. There he changes his name and goes to Edinburgh, enrolls as a medical student under his new name and takes his degree. Then he goes to Germany, acquires a second degree, and eventually secures a post as a police surgeon in the East End of London.
Good God.
There's no cause for him to lie about those things. They make the rest of his story more convincing. So after a year or two, he sails once more for India and joins the Bengal Army. It's always short of doctors.
My God, Jack, you're not suggesting...
The years in Europe account for the fact that the first murder doesn't take place for some time after the day court-martial. And it's committed with poison, you notice. A doctor's weapon.
Oh, a woman's? That's completely out of the question, Jack.
Why?
We all knew Victor. We were close friends, served with him.
That was 12 years ago. India can age a man drastically, Philip. You know that. The heat, the dirt, the flies, the diet, the drinking, the rigors of service life. No, I don't think there was any need for Victor Beckwith to buy his disguise at a theatrical costumier's. he could come by it quite simply and naturally. And, of course, also been able to cultivate a very authentic Scottish accent. Did that while he was living in Edinburgh as a medical student. Hasn't it really struck either of you that the doctor is faintly familiar? That he mightn't be the absolute stranger he pretends to be?
But it's just not possible. It isn't possible, is it, Colonel? Would you like the lamp turned up, Captain? Shall I move closer to the firelight? I mean, would you like to take a closer look?
Well,
how's that? I'm holding the lamp closer. You recognize your old friend. And you, Colonel, what about it? Something familiar, is there?
What do they say about attack being the best form of defense?
All right, then, you take a good look at me. Are you willing to swear I'm not Victor Beckwith?
I've struck a raw nerve, have I? Tricky business, this detecting.
Damn it, Jack, this isn't a game. What we're dealing with here is homicide.
What I'm going to do, gentlemen, is to order us to calm down. Let's keep our heads. I'll remind you that we're all in a very nasty situation, and one which can easily get a lot nastier.
What? What's that? Who is it? Who's there? You'd better know I've got a gun. And you'd better know I'm ready to shoot. You'd better get away from her. Damn you, stop that. What the blazes do you want? Who are you? Who are you? I know you're there. Answer me. Who's out there? You're still there. I can hear you. What are you doing there? My God. I've got the door on a chain. Oh, get away! Get away, I'm telling you! Can't see you. Ah! It's you! Oh, God almighty! Why didn't you say, hold on? There!
Come in, Rizzolder, Major. It isn't locked.
Ah. I did not know it would be open, sir.
Well?
A very dreadful occurrence, sir. The patrol was making its rounds. The attention of the Jemadar was drawn to the veranda of Captain Smith Fletcher's house bungalow.
Yes?
The door was slightly open. When the Jemadar attempted to open it, he found the Captain Saab's body lying on the floor behind it.
Dead, was he?
Dead, Saab.
In the same way as Brigadier Denniston?
In the same way as the Brigadier, Saab.
Now stay where you are, Rizzolder, Major. Now don't come any closer.
I beg your pardon, Saab?
Don't come any closer. Stay by the door. Place the lamp so that the light is behind you.
I am afraid that I do not understand, Saab.
I think you understand very well, Rizzolder, Major. I will remain so that we keep this chair between us.
Captain Maxwell.
No, no, keep where you are. Now, you see this revolver?
Yes, sir.
If you take another step, I shall shoot you where you stand.
I had better retire now, sir, and go about my duties. I came only to report the sad news to you. As with the Brigadier, you will want to view the body, sir.
No, no, Rizzolder, Major, that wasn't why you came.
Sir?
I wasn't exactly sure who my nighttime visitor was going to be, but I took care to spread the news around the camp as widely as possible that I knew who the guilty person was. In fact, right from the start, you were near the top of my list. No, no, step back.
I have delivered my message, Saab. I shall depart now.
Don't touch that handle. Turn around. You must have had an extraordinary regard for that man, Fazil Khan. For Victor Beckwith.
We all had a deep regard for Captain Beckwith, V.C., sir. He was a very great man.
Very unjustly treated.
Captain Beckwith, V.C., was treated in a fashion that was unworthy of the standard of British justice and unworthy of the Bengal Army. He was treated like a dog.
I thought it must have been something like that. His dismissal must have been a terrible blow to you. A personal betrayal.
Yes, sir. A betrayal. A most dreadful blow.
Of course.
The mutiny at Day. Why those harsh sentences? Why the blowing away from the guns? Those six men had fought at the side of the British throughout the Great Mutiny. They were my comrades. Such treatment they did not deserve. Where was the justice there?
You were already a Rizzledar at the time, of course.
Was I? A Jemadar.
You spent your life in the army. Since the age of 12, I believe.
Since the age of 12, sir. Over 40 years of service. Like my father and my father's father before me.
Then it struck at your whole existence. Well, naturally, you had to wipe out the injustice, the insult to you, to your family, to your race, to the Bengal army. And you've come here because you have to get rid of me.
You would have prevented me from finishing my task, sir. I have much work to do.
Well, I'm sorry, Fazil Khan. Isn't that what you did it with? That viceroy commissioned officer's short sword you're carrying. Oh, I've seen a lot of cutthroats in my time. You were wearing the short sword when you came to my bungalow after the brigadier's death and shook me awake. I wondered why you were armed and fully dressed at that time of the night. It wasn't your turn for duty. I dare say tonight isn't your turn for duty either. Eh? Who are you after next? After Captain Smith Fletcher and me?
Captain Smith Fletcher was a coward, sir. At the Secunderabad, he turned and ran away. It was Captain Beckwith, V.C., who brought him back, and he saved his honor. What was his reward? Captain Smith Fletcher was a coward again tonight. Yet I let him face me as I killed him. I let him die, standing up.
So I'm the next. And who's after? Colonel Graham, Captain Mitten, Major Bannister?
Not Major Bannister. He is an honorable...
Please, stop trying to move closer. Now, I won't hesitate to use this gun, you know.
Do you think they will sentence me to be blown away from a gun, sir?
You did kill Major Stone and Captain Mercer, didn't you?
Not Major Stone. He died by his own hand. He was a weak man. He had many debts. He was fond of racehorses.
Ah, then that one was just an accident.
I think he had guessed what would happen. He cheated me.
And Captain Mercer?
Captain Mercer was removed as a result of an arrangement I made in Delhi with my brother-in-law. He is a man of influence there. I told him when Captain Mercer would be going on leave and at what hotel he would be staying. I explained what I wanted to be done.
Stay back! So, if I'd looked at whether you were in Calcutta or Delhi at the critical times, I'd have drawn a blank, eh? Well, you handled matters very skillfully, Rizzledar Major.
I have been patient, sir. I have awaited the right moment.
But you don't really think you can dispose of four people in one night?
One is already dead. There are the 6 hours to dawn.
Still, rather a tall order. Even for a fighting soldier with your record, now don't take another pace towards this chair, Rizzledar Major. I really don't want to be the one to execute you, whichever way the colonel decides to do it.
What have I to lose, sir? I must take my chance. I have taken many chances before. When I served with Captain Beckwith, V.C., I was willing to die for him when he was alive. I am willing to die for him now that he is dead. Twice do you leave me. I must complete my task.
Fazil Khan!
Your revolver, my sword. I faced greater odds with Captain Beckwith, we see.
Oh, blast!
Better this way than hanged or thrown from the muzzle.
Oh, hell. Why did you make me a result, Major? Oh, damn it. Damn.
He didn't really hurt you, Doctor?
Oh, I cut in the sleeve and slash in the arm. There's nothing I couldn't deal with myself. I am a genuine doctor, Jack, believe it or not. A genuine Scotsman, too.
So, it turned out to be old Fuzzy O'Connor. We never thought it might be one of the men.
Well, we were too damn busy suspecting one another.
It must have been a great disappointment to him.
We were.
He waited a long time for his revenge.
Musk and Amber. You remember that, Colonel?
Yeah. Damnation. I wish it had been almost anyone except Fuzzy.
Come along, all of you. Cheer up. What a frightful lot of long faces. I know I'm only the guest, but since the doctor has lifted the quarantine and we're all free to go home tomorrow, do you think I might offer a toast?
But of course, my dear.
Yeah, well, yes.
Then why don't we raise our glasses to what it was that brought us all together? Why don't we drink to the 3rd Maratha Irregular Cavalry?
Oh, yes, 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 yes. The 3rd Maratha.
And can we drink to Dr. Maxwell, the best veterinary surgeon and police detective in India?
Dr. Maxwell. Dr. Maxwell.
Neatly done, Mrs. Bamford. You helped us turn an awkward corner.
Thank you, Doctor.
May I say, I think you're looking particularly beautiful tonight.
You may indeed, Doctor.
And from the way he's been looking at you, Philip Graham has evidently been feeling the same way.
I do believe you may be right, Doctor.
Maybe we'll all be attending another reunion soon. A more cheerful one. In the meantime, may I return something to you?
The amber bead with the poor fly at the center. No, Doctor, it's kind of you, but would you keep it as a souvenir of a successful case?
Oh, are you sure? But it's irreplaceable, surely. It's a truly beautiful necklace.
Yes, very beautiful. Somehow I think that I won't be wearing that particular necklace anymore.
Well, in that case, thank you. Thank you very much. I say, Glenn, don't hog all the drink. Mrs. Bamford's glass is empty. And pass me that box of perfectly filthy cheroots, will you? All the same, it is a damnable shame about Fazil Khan.
Musk and Amber was written by William Frankland. The cast, Dr. James Maxwell, Patrick Malahide, Colonel Philip Graham, Peter Howell, Fazil Khan, Gerard Green, Major Bannister, Andrew Hilton, Mrs. Bamford, Meg Ritchie, Captain Smith Fletcher, Tim Meets, Captain Glyn Myton, David Ponting, and Shusha, Shireen Shah. The play was directed in Bristol by Brian Miller.